This is 89.1 WEMU, and I'd like to welcome you to another installment of Creative Impact. My co-host and content partner is Deb Pollack. She is the president and CEO of the Arts Alliance, and each week we explore the creative industries in our community and the impact on our quality of lives. But the lives of those in the creative sector are being dramatically impacted by COVID-19, and that has been and will continue to be a subject of our ongoing explorations. Thank you again for joining us, Deb.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's our fifth creative impact under quarantine, David. And, you know, thankfully, the sound of your voice conjures up our familiar image of sitting next to you in the studio. You know, there's the power of art and music. You know, take you and your Grateful Dead fandom. How many Deadhead songs create an instant recall of where, when, and what you're doing the first time you heard them?
You know, quite sadly, I can probably recall a time and place for almost all of them, and yet I was never able to figure out trigonometry or calculus.
Well,
priorities.
You know, I think that's what our guest, Alan S. Brown, will be fascinating to you, because if there's anyone who can help us understand why we're so connected to art experiences, Alan is that guy. So let's welcome him first, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about him.
Alan, welcome to Creative Impact and WEMU.
Good morning, David.
It's great, Alan, to have you on our show. David, Alan has deep ties and has made an impact right here in Ann Arbor on our arts and cultural community. When he was just 25, Gene Power asked him to be the director of the then-fledgling Ann Arbor Summer Festival, and he stayed there for about 5 years. That was a great time here in Ann Arbor. There was a pack of us, Alan, Susan Polley, Amy Harris at the Summer Festival, Russ Collins, me, and Jill McDonough at the Michigan Theater. And then Ken Fisher came in the late 1986.
And we're talking about the Pillars.
Yeah, exactly. We were all learning all of this nonprofit young arts management field in a way that Vu Le of the nonprofit AF describes it as building a plane while flying it, throwing parachutes with a toothpick while juggling live cobras.
Sounds like fun.
Does that kind of describe it? Alan, is that what it was like then?
Yeah. It's so many great memories of the 80s in Ann Arbor.
Well, I think it's quite impressive that anyone has memories of the 80s in Ann Arbor.
But you went on, after those five successful years, you shifted gears, took your MBA, and began to study and research and analyze the arts and cultural field. Tell us quickly why you thought that was so important, that analysis and that market research.
Well, I have a degree in music from University of Michigan, which prepared me, of course, for a career in food service. But seriously, my artistic training was essential to what would become my career. I stumbled over statistics in business school at U of M and finally figured out this is what the Lord designed me to do. So I sort of taught myself research methods. I became very interested in audience behaviors and patterns of cultural participation. And really since about 1990, so over 30 years now, I've been studying audiences and kind of what makes them tick and why they go out and how they're affected by arts experiences.
And now you're really one of the foremost experts in the field, and you consult with and advise and help foundations and philanthropists and cultural institutions. So that's great. And you moved back to the Southeast Michigan area, which is also really superb. So thanks for coming back.
Well, I lived on both coasts and most recently in San Francisco for 10 years. About 2 years ago, I figured out I needed to find my forever home and very happily moved back to Detroit. So I'm now in the Boston Edison Historic District of Detroit and loving it very much.
Creative Impact continues on 89.1 WEMU with Deb Pollack of the Arts Alliance, and we're talking with Alan Brown, principal of Wolf Brown. Now, that's a marketing research and consulting support company for cultural organizations. Alan's work focuses on understanding consumer demand for cultural experiences. And speaking of which, Alan, on March 16th, just 3 days after Michigan limited public gatherings to 250 at that time, Deb and the Arts Alliance predicted the devastating financial impact that order would have and started Creative Washtenaw Aid Fund to raise support for local artists and organizations. You forecasted the same for the national creative sector, and having the ear of major foundations and philanthropists, you published a rather provocative report called A Sector in Peril, Philanthropy's Role in Responding to COVID-19. What are the key actions you want philanthropists to do in response to COVID-19 and perhaps permanently?
Yeah. Well, everyone is looking to the philanthropic sector to kind of bail out the arts sector. And I didn't see or hear a lot of strategic thinking about whether or not that's even possible or how philanthropy might invest into the crisis. So I touched base with a number of thought leaders nationally and, you know, having worked with philanthropic foundations for many years, I realized how difficult this is for them. So I kind of wanted to throw them a lifeline. I don't think that philanthropy should be looked to as a panacea. They don't have the resources. The damage is too deep here. But I do think that if philanthropic foundations can cooperate with each other, and that's a little bit like herding cats, that they can create sort of the pools of capital that will address the crisis. So, you know, starting with support for artists, particularly artists who are self-employed. They've been devastated. Their gigs have been canceled, and there's no sort of safety net for them. So I'm pleased to say that a number of big philanthropies are investing heavily into artist relief. Most recently, a consortium just announced with lead funding from Mellon Foundation. But also, foundations need to think about funding the startup. I mean, after, you know, what this looks like on the back end, everyone's going to deplete their resources and it'll be time to start programming again, and organizations won't have the money. So we really have to preserve some capital for starting up again, because it takes capital to restart. People have to be hired, artists have to be engaged, productions have to be cast and rehearsed before they can roll out. So there's a lot of capital there. I'm also thinking a lot about facilities that are in jeopardy, you know, organizations that can't pay their leases or that might Right. be at risk of foreclosure. And we have to make sure that we preserve our assets as best we can, realizing that many organizations may face insolvency or even bankruptcy.
I was going to say, it seems almost impossible that there wouldn't be some level of contraction and that we're going to start off well behind where we left off when this pandemic hit.
Well, I like to be provocative occasionally. And so, you know, from an ecosystem standpoint, one might understand this as a mass extinction event. And you can call me Chicken Little if you want, but there are hundreds, if not thousands, of nonprofits, even just here in Michigan, that just exist on a razor-thin margin.
Absolutely.
They have, you know, only enough cash for maybe 1 month, and it's gone. And we have to look at, this is one of my challenges for foundations, kind of a new way of saving organizations from bankruptcy or insolvency. A receivership program, for example, where organizations, you know, boards could vote to place their organization in a receivership program where their assets were preserved instead of just going bankrupt or just disappearing without a trace.
Beyond philanthropists and beyond any government injection of financial support that might be offered, audience has a responsibility as well, and we have a new normal about distancing and gathering, at least for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. So as you study audience behavior, how is that behavior going to change? And even if we sustain all of these facilities, will there be mm-hmm. people to go?
Well, that's, of course, what we need to know. Everyone is waiting for the restrictions to be lifted, but most likely that will happen very incrementally. And it'll be different in different cities and states. So some governors might permit gatherings up to 100 people or maybe 250 people, but then it might sit there for months and the big venues will still be closed. Of course, we don't know, but the wild card, of course, is how audiences feel about going out again to museums
right.
and theaters. And I have a suspicion that quite a few people won't be comfortable again until there's a vaccine or at least a treatment that's available. So I've launched an international survey effort to try to get this sort of regular stream of data from audiences about how they feel about going out again. And we'll have to talk again.
Indeed, we will.
We'll definitely have to have you back on, Alan, and appreciate your willingness to share this with us as it's all developing. It's good to have a friend who's getting this hard data during these hard times. So thank you. Be well and take care of yourself, and we'll have you back on.
Yeah, we will have that conversation and continue forward. That is Alan Brown, principal of Wolf Brown. And Deb Pollock, thanks for your remote participation today. We'll talk again next week as we retain our physical distancing.
Yes, given good health and with another creative conversation. Be well, everyone.
Deb Pollock is president and CEO of the Arts Alliance and our partner in Creative Impact. It's a regular feature series you hear every Tuesday. For more information on today's topic and to get to WEMU's and NPR's full coronavirus coverage, visit our webpage at WEMU.org. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU HD1 Ypsilanti.